Start your day with Morning Edition and wind it down with All Things Considered, only on KPBS. From global headlines to local stories, stay informed, inspired, and connected. Tune in daily or listen anytime at kpbs.org.
Good morning, I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. It's Tuesday, November 18th. A policy change that would apply to those already vetted and screened to legally be in the U.S. More on that next, but first, the headlines. University of California medical workers say their pay has not kept pace with the cost of living. Today is the second day of a statewide strike. Here in San Diego, hundreds of union members walked off the job yesterday. Michael Ammons is a medical biller at UC San Diego Medical Center. He says paying rent has been a challenge.
We're out here on an economic strike because of UC's failure to address the affordability crisis that our workers are facing or struggling to survive.
A University of California spokesperson says UC has already increased pay to at least $25 an hour. The San Diego sector of the Border Patrol has a new leader with San Diego roots. Justin M. De La Torre has been with the agency for 25 years, starting at the Imperial Beach Border Patrol Station. He previously served as Chief Patrol Agent of the Yuma, Arizona sector and says it's an honor to return to the sector where his career began. As expected, we received a good amount of rain over the weekend. Saturday alone saw about a quarter inch more of rain than the city of San Diego averages for the entire month of November. A weaker Pacific storm moved in yesterday evening. It will bring isolated showers that are expected this evening and into Wednesday. There is also a third system predicted to begin by late Thursday or Friday and bring with it even more rain. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need.
Stay connected to the world around you. KPBS brings you trusted news, compelling stories, and in-depth reporting every day. Wherever life takes you, KPBS is here, on the radio, online, and on the go. Discover more at kpbs.org.
The Trump administration is considering making its June travel ban retroactive to immigrants already legally in the United States. Military and veterans reporter Andrew Dyer says this includes tens of thousands of Afghan refugees.
The draft policy would affect green card applicants and asylum seekers from countries on the list, which is mostly those in Africa and the Middle East. What's unusual about the policy is that it would apply to people already vetted, screened, and approved to be in the U.S.
These are folks who are fleeing persecution.
Sean Van Diver is the president and co-founder of San Diego-based Afghan Evac, a nonprofit that advocates for the U.S.'s former allies from Afghanistan.
Some of whom came here as refugees, some of whom are wartime allies that were flown here by the United States government and told, hang out for a second, you'll get through our immigration process, and you'll have your shot at the American dream.
The policy is being considered amid other drastic changes to the country's asylum system. Last month, the administration announced it would only accept 7,500 refugees this year, with priority given to white South Africans. Andrew Dyer, KPBS News.
Earlier this year, the Pacific Legal Foundation filed a lawsuit against UC San Diego over a scholarship fund for black students. The Black Alumni Scholarship Fund was meant to raise enrollment and graduation rates for black students. After a recent settlement, the scholarship has been renamed and is open to all qualified applicants, regardless of race. Kiara Bridges is a professor of law at UC Berkeley. She spoke with KPBS Midday Edition host Jade Heinemann.
So this right-leaning organization argued the lack of access to the scholarship is an example of institutionalized racism. How would you define that term, and would you apply it here?
So institutional racism, as scholars have come to conceptualize the term, refers to race-neutral institutional processes that nevertheless reinforce, reconfirm, reinstitute racial hierarchy. And so your question to me was, you know, would I apply the concept of institutional racism to this scholarship that was open only to Black students at UC San Diego? And my answer would be no, for a couple of reasons. One, institutional racism refers to race-neutral processes. And so this scholarship had race on its face. It was only open to Black students or Black applicants. And so it's not race-neutral in the way that we conceptualize institutional racism within the academy. And second, I wouldn't think of it as institutional racism because the scholarship has never worked to reaffirm racial hierarchy. And by racial hierarchy, I want to be precise. I'm referring to a system in which white people as a group are doing much better than non-white people as a group. And by better, I mean in terms of lifespan, I mean in terms of income, in terms of wealth, in terms of the ability to avoid the criminal legal system, whether that's policing or prisons. I mean the ability to survive childbirth, which is what I work on. I work on maternal mortality and morbidity. And, you know, Black folks are dying at 3 to 4 times the rate as white folks. And so when I'm talking about racial hierarchy, I'm talking about a system in which non-white people are not doing as well as white folks. And so to the extent that this scholarship was designed to interrupt those processes that make that true, I would not describe it as participating in institutional racism. Instead, I would describe it as challenging institutional racism. And so to the extent that the plaintiffs want to describe the scholarship as institutional racism, it's like where we're in the upside down, where it's topsy-turvy, but it's also consistent with this colorblind logic, which ignores racial hierarchy and instead says that we just need to ignore race and act like race doesn't matter in our present sociopolitical circumstances.
Do you think the misunderstanding of this term is intentional?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So the reason why I answered your question so quickly, one of two things. One, I could be wrong and they don't know what institutional racism is. They don't know what structural racism is. And so they're just going to misuse the term out of ignorance. But more likely, I believe they understand how these terms have been used, again, for well over half a century, and they are co-opting the term, they're reformulating the term in order to make it mean things that it hasn't meant, but it can accomplish political ends. And the political end that they're using this term to accomplish is colorblindness in a society in which race and color matter very much.
So how do the questions at the heart of this case mirror the attacks we're seeing toward anti-racism initiatives and diversity, equity, and inclusion programs nationwide?
This case is really just an example of the broader efforts, you know, in society to make institutions and make individuals ignore the fact that race matters. And so this attack on this, you know, scholarship at UC San Diego is just a piece with that. So UC San Diego now has to pretend that these race-based barriers don't exist and now open the scholarship up to everyone as if everyone is facing the same barriers.
That was UC Berkeley Professor of Law Kiara Bridges speaking with KPBS Midday Edition host Jade Heinemann. County leaders say deep federal cuts are putting food, housing, and health programs for the neediest county residents at risk. County supervisors will vote today to approve a partnership with local philanthropic foundations to help keep those services operating. Mark Stewart is CEO of the San Diego Foundation. He says the partnership would create a $36 million fund.
So the first and foremost, what this partnership does is it protects nonprofit organization contracts with the county focused on healthcare, housing, and food security so that they are not eliminated when the county has to do some of its really significant budget cutting.
The money would keep food distribution sites open, help families stay housed, and support basic health services. This Saturday, the Comic-Con Museum not only has exhibits on Doctor Who and luchadors, but also offers a pair of panels to enlighten you about Marvel's Daredevil and comics in many forms. Arts reporter Beth Accomando has this preview.
On Saturday, you can start your morning at the Comic-Con Museum with a drawing workshop, followed by a lively discussion about comics in many forms, organized by San Diego State University's Center for Comic Studies. The panel will compare English-language comics with ones from France, Italy, and Japan. Antonio Iannotta is one of the panelists.
Italian comics are called fumetti, and so the word fumetto comes from fumo, that is the smoke of the balloon that comes from, visually, that comes from the mouth of the speaker.
Then, author Chris Ryle will discuss his new book on his beloved superhero, Daredevil. It's one of the inaugural titles in Bloomsbury Academic and Marvel's new Marvel Age of Comics series.
I'm one of the four launch books, and my book is all about Frank Miller and David Mazzucchelli's Daredevil Born Again. So I'll be discussing all the reasons why I think it's notable and influential and memorable and lasting and important and all of those things.
Ryle will be signing copies of his Daredevil Born Again. Beth Accomando, KPBS News.
That's it for the podcast today. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. Thanks for listening and subscribing. By doing so, you're supporting public media, and I thank you for that. Have a great day.
Connected to the world around you, KPBS brings you trusted news, compelling stories, and in-depth reporting every day. Wherever life takes you, KPBS is here, on the radio, online, and on the go. Discover more at kpbs.org.